Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
Hey, Potty fam. Welcome to part two of my chat with Laura Byrne and Brittany Hockley, co-hosts of the Life Uncut podcast and KISS 106.5's The Pickup Radio Show. These girls are one of the most well-known media personalities in Australia, which you may remember from The Bachelor. In this part, we talk more about the businessy side of things, including Laura's jewelry business, Tony May, which she's had for more than 13 years. Anyway, if you haven't listened to part one yet, go and check it out because it was seriously so much fun chatting to the girls. All right, let's get into it.
How did you guys meet?
When The Bachelor was happening, basically when you are one of the final girls, there's always some jeopardy in your storyline, right? There's always something where usually it's like nice, nice, nice. Then something happens to make the audience angry at you. And it's usually to throw the scent of the fact that it's not going to be you, right?
Otherwise it's too boring.
Yeah. So yeah. The way in which the roles work in The Bachelor, and this is probably going to give too much away from a production side, but like The number one girl always has some jeopardy in her storyline. Not enough for you to hate her, but enough for you to feel a little bit unstable at some point in time.
And usually towards the end.
The number two girl is the girl next door that everybody loves. And the number three girl is the girl that everybody wishes he chose. That's how it works across majority
and
of the season.
It's all editing.
Yeah.
And it's created that way. So that way when number three goes, there's a huge and adverse reaction, but you don't want that adverse reaction when it's the final two, because like The Bachelor doesn't want everyone to hate the person that is chosen, right? But they want the friction enough to keep you guessing. So that's kind of how they produce it. I had come to realize that Brit was probably the number one. Like she was probably going to be there at the very, very end because there was like some jeopardy in her storyline.
I was being thrown under the bus.
And it didn't really make a lot of sense. And so I was like, I'll just reach out because Alex Nation had reached out to me the year before and she had said, I hope you're okay. And if you need to talk to anyone, like I'm here. And at the time, we were the very first season of social media. There was no other season that had social media prior. And so the production side of things didn't have the resources or the understanding how to handle it. So we as contestants were obliterated online socially. Right. Like I'm talking hundreds of thousands.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Thousands of messages. I'm talking like people telling you to go kill yourself, that you
they
hope you have cancer, that you're like unfuckable, like just like literally anything that your brain could come up with as an insult, we all received it. And there was never the onus for responsibility of how to manage that was always just, oh, just block and delete, which is fine. But I still had to read them to block and delete them. So I was still reading all those messages. Whereas now the social media accounts are managed the networks.
And I
so,
think the comments are turned off as well.
Yeah, when they know something controversial
is
coming.
Because of how bad it was for a couple of years.
But it was really at the time for our seasons mismanaged. And there was really, I mean, I know they've come a long way and I don't put any blame on them because they didn't know what they were doing, but there was no duty of care in terms of how social media was navigated. And so I reached out to Brit and was like, if you need anyone to talk to, here's my number, call me.
I actually remember what you said. I remember Laura had said, I know it probably feels like the world hates you and everyone's against you. And I know you probably haven't gotten out of bed or left your house in days. That's what she said. And I was laying in bed crying and I was like, how does she know? I was like, because there are paparazzi waiting outside your house. Everyone hates you. The mass moves on, the crowd moves on. But at that time, I thought the entire world hated me.
And you're like, we're so negatively geared as people. Like when you receive bad feedback, that will stick. Even if you receive
so much more,
even as you receive like thousands of nice messages and you receive hundreds of negative ones, the hundreds of negative ones feel way more outweighed. I remember something that one of the publicists said to me. He was like, it was the very, very finale night. And he said, I want you to know that there will be nastiness tonight. He's like, there will absolutely be people who, you know, wish Matt chose someone else, blah, blah, blah. He was like, but you've also got to understand that anyone who goes out of their way to write something truly awful is a crazy person or they're a kid. No normal person in their 20s or 30s is going to tell you to go kill yourself because you're on a reality TV. They're just not, you know? So that final photo that gets posted by the batch, like the Instagram account, he was like, I want you to know that there will be like 50,000 people who are going to like that photo. That's 50,000 normal people who liked something and then went on with their day. He's like, and then there's going to be like 10,000 people who are going to write comments. He's like, and 8,000 of those are going to be positive and 2,000 of them will be crazies. He's like, but they are the people who, if you were walking down the street, you would cross the road to get onto the other side. He's like, they all have Instagram accounts. And that really helped me like manage my feelings around it. I reached out to Brit. She called me straight away.
She goes, call me if you need. And she'd barely press send. Oh. And I was like, hello.
And we chatted for like half an hour. And then Brit ended up moving to Bondi. And so when she was in Bondi, we caught up for breakfast and we just kind of ran into each other a couple of times. And then the podcast started before our friendship had even really solidified. So we met and knew that we had some chemistry and knew that we had this really unique shared experience. We also had this unique shared experience of dating similar types of like relationships that were quite duplicitous in this kind of double life situation. It's just kind of how it all evolved and how it turned out to be a dating relationships podcast to start with.
I think that's the interesting thing too. And a lot of people don't know that is that the business came before the friendship. And I say that in terms of we were friends on the surface level, but we barely knew each other.
We liked each other. We knew we could be friends, but we hadn't spent the time.
We decided to do the podcast, maybe on our third date. We just realized that there was an opening for people having the exact conversations we were. I remember the reason I wanted to do one was because I almost inadvertently became the face of breakups. And when I say breakups, it's because no one had ever been dumped on The Bachelor like I had. And so many people reaching out saying, how did you get over it? How did you deal? Like, I'm going through this at the moment. I tried to write back to every single person because I was so new to that world. And I was like, I need to help everyone, which I know now is impossible. And the idea for the podcast came because I thought, I can't keep writing to these people and helping them. But I also can't ignore them. How do you reach someone like the masses? I met Laura and it just seemed like the perfect. Again, it comes back to that pull. I knew that there was not one part of our life that was ready to do that podcast, but we just had this feeling of like, there's something in this and we have to explore it.
And it's such a perfect platform to have those candid, open conversations, like unproduced, as in like not produced by like someone else being like, you can't say this. Anything you post on Instagram has to be like edited and, you know, produced.
Totally.
But this is like an open platform just to like, just have a rant.
Even with social media now, I think originally when I started using social media, because I didn't have an account off the back of Bachelor either. So I had to create one for the show. I had a Tony May, like a business account, yeah, but I didn't have a personal one. So I was never putting personal photos up. When we were on the show, I had two photos, and then that's how my personal Instagram started. But I think originally I felt like everything had to be edited. I felt like I had to be perfect on there. And then over the years, for anyone who follows my Instagram would know, like, it's very unperfect. I think it very much mirrors what's happening on the podcast. But that also comes from like having kids and my lack of time and my lack of care now.
I tell the Showpro team, I'm like, guys, you need to have like a spatial image and then a crop and then blah. And I'm like, guys, the colors are all mixed. This is a mess. And then you go to my Instagram feed and then it's there's chaos. Like 20 heads. I'm like, it's like, group shot, group shot, group shot, close up, close up. And the colors, it's chaos. I can't even look at my grid.
But no one does. No one cares. Yeah, like yeah, people used to care about this grid aesthetic. Like they really used to like, yeah, people used, do you remember when people used to do like the blues into the greens, into the yellows, into the reds, and everything was like,
people still aesthetic. Do that.
I could not give a flying fuck. Like mine is like 17 heads at the moment, just in a row.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My children like singing something into a can.
When I first had Instagram and I thought, you know, back when it was like that vignette filter kind of days. And I think this might have even been like, potentially even the Showpro Instagram, because we were still mainly on Facebook. It was my personal became Showpro. And then I didn't have my own Instagram account for like years. My partner and I went to China. This is even before there was a firewall, which is such a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So we posted on Instagram. We were in Guilin where the mountains were. So there was really low internet. And I posted a photo of the views and he's lying down in bed in his jocks and his hands are down his pants. Not just us. You know, sometimes it's just nice to put your hands
totally
down.
Totally holding.
I sleep holding my boob.
But I posted that and then that went on my Instagram, which is linked to Facebook, I think like for 2 days to all of our family and friends. And then when we left the mountains, I was like, oh my God.
You're like, what have
I? Sorry.
What have I done?
Actually, something I really relate to was when you did decide to start the podcast and you trapped Laurie and they're like, let's just do this one episode. I had a business partner initially that I started Showpro with. And so we had just met, got introduced. We didn't really know each other.
Wait, you guys weren't doing a reality TV show?
No, we didn't do a TV show. We met over dinner. We had some wines and we're like, oh my God, like we get along. A handful of times meeting, we're like, let's start this business. Again, we got really drunk, but she already had her own successful business. And I had a business that failed. My first business in fashion failed. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want this to be the alcohol talking. So I went home and like created the website that night because I wanted to trap her in.
Yeah.
So I wanted her to be like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing it. I wanted it to be too awkward for her to back out.
It's so funny and I wish I could find it, but like our first meeting, proper meeting, because I came from medicine too. So like Laura had at least run her business. She had run a business. I had not done a fucking thing in my life. Like I turned up, did some scans, resuscitated someone, left. But I was like, how to do a podcast? I remember our first meeting, I took a notepad. We sat down and we brainstormed with a pen and paper. We wrote a few names down and then I went home and I drew a picture because I was big on manifesting.
Yeah.
I was really going through my meditation manifestation phase and I just drew this picture that had Laura and I, stick figures with ponytails. I think I've still got it somewhere. And we were standing outside. We were like holding hands. We had a microphone and then the sun was shining and there were birds, but everything was money. So like the bird's wings were dollar signs and like it is because that
I love
was
that
my,
you've just said we don't do this for money and then you're like, I manifested a business.
No, because money was equaling it freedom. Working. No, yes. Well, it equaled success. And I had just finished this whole course on manifestation.
Oh, you know how they're always like, imagine money raining down on you. Like,
and part of it was like, draw what you see now. Like draw what you want. You know, I just met Laura and we were doing this thing and then picture the success. And at the time, 100% success to me meant money because success meant I didn't have to do my hospital job anymore. Success meant I had stability and I had reassurance. And so like the birds were dollar signs. The sun rays were dollar signs. I kept that. And it's I thought that's, that was how I really wanted to solidify for myself and for us. And I was like, we're going to do it. Then I also just booked a podcast studio. We didn't know what we were doing. We just booked a random studio, found a random guy to help us. It was a disaster. There were a lot of hiccups at the start.
Yeah. Do you remember from maths, Andrew, the guy who like,
I don't even need to put this out there.
He used to work as a podcaster. We didn't know him. This is pre-Married at First Sight, but
he was a baddie. like a bad character.
It was a naughty boy. We didn't know him. He helped us set up the the streaming thing for the podcast.
Yeah, like 5 years ago. Yeah.
But you've gone from having this podcast that like you're like in your scrubs, you've got your baby, you've got Marley there, and you didn't actually make money for the first year.
Yeah.
And so how did it, was there like a inflection point where it just kind of exploded? I know it did top it. It was number one from the start, but was there a point where you're like, whoa?
I think for us, like, I mean, firstly, there was no point where I was worried about it being and having potential. I mean, when you started your own business and you have a business that you've had for 6 years by that point in time, like I knew the hustle.
Yeah.
I know that like there's no such thing as an overnight success. An overnight success is like all the many years that you put into something until it then becomes successful. So I wasn't like, oh, this is going to be overnight. We're going to, you know, turn this into a business and it's going to be, you know, profit positive. So that never like occurred to me as being something that was worrisome. We always had the downloads. So like the downloads, it always did really well in terms of downloads. It always was growing. The community was growing. It was just this like really amazingly organic conversation that was growing the network around it. The thing we didn't have the capacity for was, or the skill set or the support was to sell the ad space. So we had the ad space, but we didn't know how to sell the ad space. And also it was at a time when brands didn't see podcasting as like a viable medium for advertisement. It was still really early in terms of like brand security, like brands feeling as though it was a good investment. Whereas like that's shifted so much in the last 4.5 years.
I would actually challenge that, Laura. I would say, and I say this because I was the salesperson from day one, I did all of our sales, contracts, negotiations. Laura did all the editing. I 100% had the capacity to do it. I can talk underwater. I could sell water to fish. And I did end up doing that. The problem was podcasting in Australia was so early that brands didn't know how to trust it. And a brand to give money to a podcast, where at that time there was no way to show how many people came to your site from that ad, how many people clicked on it. It's not a swipe up on Instagram. Trying to get brands, and it's still something now. We've been 4.5 years and we have signed to ARN now. So I handed over that sales to the radio station and they sell. They still say the same thing. I did the job of what 10 people do now, and they still have trouble getting brands to completely trust to put their money in podcasting instead of a TV ad, a radio ad, a billboard.
You know, they feel comfortable.
It was new. It was so new. Yeah.
Also lots more technology now. Like the metrics around it didn't really exist 4.5 years ago. Whereas now there are like really sophisticated backends that can tell you how many impressions an ad's getting. They can tell you who's listened to it, how many people, what demographic, like all of those stats that just weren't available. So it's hard to convince a brand that a medium for advertising is successful when you have no metrics to back it up. And that's what I meant by not having the resources, not as in like skills, as in like we didn't physically have the resources to sell the ads because it didn't exist.
We're essentially saying, hey, trust my voice and trust Laura's voice.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, because that's what someone, a brand is giving money to. And the first year, we started to make money in the last couple of months, but like you wouldn't be quitting your job. You know, I still worked in the hospital for the first 2 years of the podcast.
Yeah, you worked during COVID.
Yeah, I did the whole COVID.
No, you quit during COVID.
I quit in the second half of COVID,
but
that's because I got stuck overseas. I didn't quit intentionally. I went overseas to watch my partner play at Wimbledon. I literally just took a break and I couldn't get back into the country for 5 months. And that's when I decided not to go back. I 100% would have seen the whole of COVID out. That was the plan. And that was not necessarily because of money. The podcast was doing really well then. But that was also because there was a shortage of healthcare workers. People were coming out of retirement to work. And it was a really crazy time. And there's almost, if you are in healthcare, it's because you're an empathetic person. And I don't know anyone that had the skill set to be working at that time that chose not to. It's just one of those things that was almost, you didn't question it. You were like, yeah, sure, I'll go. Sure, I'll stay back 6 hours tonight. Sure, like, you know, because the flow-on effect of COVID, not just how many people were sick, and the pressure on the healthcare system, but how long everything took. And then if one staff member got COVID, it's crazy now to think about because we look at it like the flu. If one staff member got COVID, everyone that had been around that person, staff members, had to go off sick. So there were never any staff. I'm almost grateful I got stuck overseas at that time because it was soul crushing. And that was what led me to believe that, like, you know, it was time to let that go and move on with the pod.
Hey Polly fam, I've got something special for you. For a limited time only, I have a discount code for my business course. In case you didn't know, the course is a blueprint for starting an online business and growing it to 7 or 8 figures. It's 10 modules of videos that you can watch at your own pace, covering everything from sourcing product, growing and developing your product range, operations, and marketing and scaling your business. Just use the code podcast at checkout at thelazyceo.com.
The first episode, like, you weren't happy with it. Progress over perfection. Like, let's just get it out.
Our recording equipment, we didn't really know what we were doing. So we had it set up, but there was like quite a bit of feedback in the microphones. I mean, you can still go back and listen to our first episode. It's still there.
Don't listen.
Like, if you want to, if you want to have like the benchmark for how bad something can be at the start, we recorded it. We really enjoyed the conversation we had, but the quality of the audio was fucking terrible. And so we tried, like we tried to re-record it, but it just didn't have the spontaneity because we were just repeating a conversation the second time around. Mm-hmm. And so we tried. I listened to it back again. We did a good job of the first episode. It's just the audio quality. So like, Let's put it out. I was pregnant. I was like, I don't have it in me to do multiple takes on this. And I was weeks off having a baby.
There wasn't a lot to compare it to either.
Yeah.
So we were like, oh yeah, it's bad, but is it that bad? And now we listen and we're like, it's bad.
We got it out. I'm a big believer of that in business. Like, I think that some people get so caught up in perfection that they never actually get started. And I think it's a matter of just putting a product out and then you make that product better on the go quickly. Like, you learn from the feedback, you learn from the mistakes you make. But I think if you are so hell-bent on having something perfect before you start, you physically will never start or you'll never get it out the door.
Yes, I completely agree. And so we didn't even, like, on this business podcast, didn't even get to talk about your business. So how is Tony May going? How did that start? What are the challenges you face in the business?
I started it. I was working. I did graphic design at uni, fine arts, but I also did the graphic design because that was like my backup career. So like my career that I was actually going to make money from was doing graphic design and being a graphic designer in studios. And jewelry was my hobby, which I never actually really thought could be a full-time job. And I think that's because my mum was a jeweler, but it was her hobby and she was a school teacher. So I'd seen it kind of emulated as like, oh, that's a market thing that you do. You make jewelry, you sell at the markets. So that's what I did. I started making jewelry. I started selling at the markets. I did Bondi Markets for years. And it only was when it got to a point where Bondi Markets was making me a comparable income. I fucking hated my job like so much. I was working in pharmaceutical graphic design. And I read an article on Samantha Wills around how she had started and where she, and I was reading this and I was like, oh my God, she started at Bondi Markets. And it was that was like the real catalyst for me where I was like, okay, maybe if I have a website, maybe if I, you know, start doing this seriously. A guy, Jeremy Summers, he's a designer. He had a really successful swimwear label at the time that was like being worn by Rihanna. It was one with like the Black Panthers on the front of it. And the name has completely gone out of my head. But I was sharing a studio space with him in Cleveland Street. He had a few small labels in there and we were all subletting off him. And I remember him coming in this one night because I was still making every single piece of jewelry myself. And he did like a talk to young designers and then they all went out for a drink and they came back. He came back at like 2 a.m. to pick up some stuff and I was still in there making jewelry. He was very drunk and he came up to me and he was like, fucking get ready. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, get fucking ready. I was like, okay, Jeremy, you are really drunk. And he was like, no, he's like, you are trying to wholesale. He's like, and you are not ready. He's like, cause you're going to get a $100,000 order that's going to come in and you can't service it and you are going to screw yourself. And he's like, you have no factories. You have no resources. You are not ready. And I was like, okay, fair. I'm not ready.
How do I get ready?
It was that off the back that I then like went and found a factory that could manufacture in a way that I was making the jewelry. From there, it was me doing everything. And now we've grown into, we have our store, which is on Paddington on Oxford Street. And we have 10 staff within Australia. And then overseas, we have 45 staff who work for us solely, who are our, like, we have incredible silversmiths and gemstone cutters and goldsmiths. And it's been because I was able to remove myself from working on it every day. And now I can, you know, actually oversee and design and do the things that I love, but hiring other skilled people was absolutely instrumental in turning it from like a market business into turning it into a real business.
Wow. And then how do you balance that with like the podcast, the two kids?
My sister. So
you had the book. Yeah. You wrote a book and then you weren't Dancing with the Stars last year.
Like, yeah, it's wild.
Balance, oh, that, this year. It was this year. Oh my God, this year. I can't even tell. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, yeah. That I'm traumatized song. By that song.
like PTSD. During The Bachelor, when I had that 3 months off, my sister, who at the time owned her own marketing company, an experimental marketing company, she took over and was like, just basically keeping the lights on. That's all I asked her to do. I was like, just make sure, like, here are all my supplier lists, like, make sure that everything is done. I don't expect you to do much. Just don't make it go into bankruptcy.
No pressure.
And I came out and she had absolutely just done such an incredible job. She's such an A personality type. She fills all the gaps that I can't do. So she was part owner in a company and she was really unhappy there. And so she put it to me and she was like, I want to buy in. What would that look like to you? And so we came to an arrangement. So now she owns a percentage of Tony May. Yeah. We're both directors of the company and we run it together. So she is like the absolute backbone of what keeps things like churning. And she does all the logistical side and everything that I hate, she has done. And it meant that I got to do all the creative, which is the stuff that I like thrive in. It's the stuff I love doing.
That's incredible. And then you can leave. This is your baby, your firstborn that you can leave with your family.
Totally.
As well.
And it's like having that team around you that you trust, that you know are going to care about it enough to do the job that you would do. Because I think that's the hardest thing when it's your business, right? Is like trusting someone else and letting go of the things because you think, well, I'll just do it because I'll do it better.
Yeah.
But then you're just doing everything.
I think it's also the benefit of running your own business. It's a lot of people that work a 9-to-5 look at people like you, Laura, or you, Jane, and think, how do they do it all? But when you have your own business, it's up to you when you get it done. So like, exactly. So sometimes we would have done things at midnight.
I mean, you say that, but customers who want orders are like, I want it now.
But do you do that at 8 a.m.? You can also do it at midnight.
Totally.
Is my point. So I speak for both of us, but for example, Laura, this opportunity for dancing came along. It was hard. Everything changes. Her business changed days. We recorded at different times to suit Laura, but you can do that because we all have our own business. And when an opportunity comes for me, Laura does the same thing. She's like, okay, cool. I'll try to shuffle stuff to make it work for you. I'd hate for people to sit at home watching business, like watching people that look like they have it all thinking that it's easy, but that job is getting done at 1 a.m.
Oh yeah, you make massive sacrifices. Yeah. It's that old saying. I mean, people say, I quit my 9-to-5 to work 24 hours a day, which is true. You do. You quit your 9-to-5 and you work.
And you never sleep again.
10 times more. But it's different because I feel like for me, now my work is so integrated into my life in a way that I love. It's not like I'm not saying I'm going to work and then thank God work is over. I don't mind doing work at 11 p.m. at night because it's work I want to do. Like I want to be working. I want to get those projects done.
It's never a chore.
If anything, sometimes it's finding the balance and ensuring that the people who I love in my life, my kids, my husband, my friends, feel like they're also a priority because I am such a workaholic. I love working. And that's my biggest challenge when it comes to balance.
And that's where my lazy CEO comes from. You know, if you love what you do, you don't have to work.
You never work. Yeah. But you work harder than anyone.
I'm going to wrap it up because you guys, I know you have to go. Do we have time for 2 truths and 1 lie?
Okay. I am really big on shooting my shot. So I shot my shot with Michelle Obama to come on Life Uncut podcast, slid into her DMs on Instagram. Whilst she was too busy doing first lady things, she said no, but she did respond and we did have a small conversation, which she congratulated me on my success and the success of the podcast. I got a liver parasite when I was chasing anacondas in the Amazon jungle. I crashed a moped in a bikini that I was illegally driving into a police car in front of 1,000 people.
Ooh.
2 truths, 1 lie.
Oh my God, they're so different. They're great. Okay, I think let's go police crash.
Wrong. Oh. I did crash a car in a bikini on a moped into a police car.
Oh my God. That's
no, sick. And I did chase Amazon in the Amazon. I did chase anacondas and got a parasite for a year.
Michelle Obama did not reply.
I did message her. She did not reply.
Also, if she did reply, it was never her. It was always going to be her assistant.
I also messaged Barack. Barack didn't reply. Right, they're both pretty busy. Yeah.
So good. Okay. I once won the lottery when I was in my 20s. I got trapped in a window naked and I got robbed when I was in Ibiza, but I didn't realize that I was robbed at the time.
Oh my God, they're all so good and so believable. Okay, the lottery.
Is the lottery a lie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't win the lottery.
I was going to say you've been kidding, but that one, what was it, $16?
I have been trapped in a window naked. I had to get rescued by the people who come and rescue, the like police services. I did get robbed when I was in Ibiza. The window naked one is good. So I'd just gotten back from a massive trip in my bedroom at the time. You know those old slack windows that you could pull up? Like it was an old building. It had like the rope slacks that keep the window from falling down. It was the middle of the night. I was butt-ass naked. My shit was everywhere because my suitcase had just basically exploded. And there was a fly buzzing around the window. And so I got up half asleep, completely naked, And I went and opened the window to let the fly out. And I had my hand on the side and the thing came slamming down and it fully shut and my fingers were shut, but they were jammed in the window. And so it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm butt ass naked screaming. And my housemate thought I had been out partying and she thought I was out the front calling her to let me in. And she was like, I'm not letting this girl in. Oh. So she just stayed in her bedroom. And it was the people in the apartment block that my window faced into.
Oh.
That heard me screaming and they called an ambulance and then the ambulance couldn't get me out. And so then they called the police and the police had to cut the window. But anyways, I'm fine. I have all my fingers. Wow. Like, can't even tell.
Oh my God, she has no dignity left. There's like all
a tiny scar on one finger and that's it. Like
oh
it was,
God.
It was.
Was that worse than childbirth? Oh my God.
Worse than the second childbirth, not worse than the first one.
Right.
Yeah. The first one sucked.
First one's always hard here.
Yeah. The first one's always worse.
Oh my God. Okay. So what is the one advice that you would want to give your younger selves?
It's so hard to think of one piece of advice, but when I think back to everything that I've wanted to do, I've always had this idea of I'm too old to do it, which you're not. Like I was having those thoughts in my 20s. Like I remember I went to acting school all through my 20s out of passion and hobby. I just loved it. I always wanted to be an actress, but I never tried.
You would have been so torn between acting and like radiology.
Well,
now you've kind of like, you've,
I'm trying to get back into acting, but I never pursued acting because I always felt too old, which is crazy because I was 25, 26, 27. But I was like, oh, I would have, you know, you got to break in when you're 18, 19, 20. When I think about starting businesses, even now, I'm like, oh, you're too old. When I think of studying something else, I'm like too old, like time's already gone. And it's so not true. Like you are never, ever. Well, you're never going to be as young as you are now, but you're never too old to do anything. And I wish that's probably not a mainstream piece of advice, but something that when I look back at my life, it's something I always thought about.
I find it hard in terms of like thinking like what's my favorite piece of advice, because I think that all of the failures is what gets you to a place. It's like where the learnings come from. So like there's no part of my life that I look back on and I think I wish I could have changed that, because I know that if I was to change it, I wouldn't be where I am now. But I do, I mean, if I was to go back and comfort my younger self at all, it would be to say that people who make you cry all the time don't love you. And people who make you cry all the time are not people that you should invest your time into. So it would be a relationship one, because I think I always really held on to relationships because I saw the potential in what they could be, even though they were never, ever going to be that. And they never proved themselves to be that. I just was like, I'm going to make it because I like to fix broken birds. That was my thing in my 20s.
As a ridiculously successful woman, Jane, what's yours?
Oh my God. Okay. My thing is, yes, to not listen to what other people think, because they actually think so little about you. They're actually only just thinking about themselves.
Totally.
I think I grew up with a fear of failure, mainly because of what other people would think.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just do it, because like whatever you're doing, it can only get better by doing more, trying more, practicing more. And it's just literally one step at a time. So I think to actually think of life as with a long-term view, when you're younger, you're like, it's this or it's, you know, it's this now or never. But no, it's like, keep going. I have this analogy of life and business being like golf. Like, I don't play golf. I have no idea if this is an analogy.
But like,
it's not about getting a hole in one. It's about like just whacking it as close as you can to the hole. And then the
hoping
main
the wind blows it in.
Yeah, yeah, with a bit of help from the wind. But like the whole thing is just like when you miss, pivot, adjust. Most important thing is just to have another swing and to keep going.
The other thing is too, I'm really getting into it now, one last thing, but time is going to go past anyway. And I think this comes back to me saying you're too old for something. In 4 years' time, 4 years has gone past.
Yeah.
You've either done your degree that you wanted to do in that time or you haven't because you thought you were too old. Either way, you're going to end up at that point. So do you want to end up at that point with your dream or with your, you know, whatever you deem to be successes, or do you want to just be cruising through because you thought, oh, exactly, there's no way I could do it. Like that time is going past anyway and you cannot stop it.
That's a great way to think about it. And the fact that this is the youngest we'll ever be again.
100%.
Right now. You know, this advice is all great. If you're 95 and you're listening to this, you might have missed the boat. But for anyone in their 30s and 20s and 40s and 50s, like you're still fine.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Jane, you're the best. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change?
needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.